Welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, joined by Crystal Graham today. Crystal's going to join me. We're going to talk about Street Knowledge preview the UVA Duke football game coming up on Saturday. And Crystal, a couple of big games in the ACC among our in-state teams. NC State traveling to Blacksburg to play Virginia Tech. We'll focus on UVA Duke though here in our backyard. And I just can't believe, Crystal, that it's almost actually here. We're 2 days away as we're recording this, as we're doing this live, I should say as well. We're 2 days away, finally, from college football starting in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Well, you certainly aren't the only one that are ready for football. UVA coach Bronco Mendenhall saying this week that it feels real, finally. They had like a true game week where they're preparing for the game. Chris, I don't know about you, but, you know, what are the coaches and players really having to say about game week this week? Because unlike other teams, you know, this is the season opener for UVA football. Unfortunately, their game with VMI, of course, was canceled after they decided to play most of the games, you know, within the ACC. And then later, Virginia Tech pulled out due to COVID-19 concerns among their team.
Yeah, well, Bronco noted in his Monday press conference with reporters that this is actually, in a way, the fifth opener for Virginia this year. If you think about, college football schedules are generally made years in advance. And it's funny that this year they're being made week to week almost. But they're usually made years in advance. And back in 2017, UVA was announced as the season opening opponent for Georgia. In the Chick-fil-A Classic in the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. So for years and then for months, we thought UVA Georgia on Labor Day night in Atlanta. Then that got, of course, when everything got shuttered around, that was gone. Then it was VMI, as you mentioned. VMI then shut down because the Southern Conference decided to shut down. I say they decided to shut down. There are Southern Conference teams still playing, but VMI went with most of the rest of the Southern Conference decided not to play. So then it was Virginia Tech, and then Virginia Tech had issues with a couple players getting COVID and some contact tracing leading to the decision not to try to play that game with less than a full roster. So then it looked like Virginia may have to play Clemson in October as their opener, which would have been just ridiculous. These guys have been on ground since July 5th. Bronco noted that, a couple players noted that this week as well. That they've been practicing for 12 weeks. This is an unusual year, to say the least. 12 weeks of summer practice because they didn't get a spring. UVA, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, the three ACC programs that did not get spring practice started before the COVID shutdowns. Some programs had gone all the way through almost to their spring game, but those three programs didn't get any practice in the spring. And so they had more in the summer, but yeah, at some point, 12 weeks of same guys, hitting the same guys over and over. You want to go hit somebody in a different colored uniform in a game that counts. And so they finally get that chance this weekend.
Right. And of course, UVA announcing earlier this week that the football team has no active cases, of course, of COVID-19. And I think they're just anxious to play football.
They are. And that was evident from talking with Coach Mendenhall, and some players were made available to us this week as well. A trio of seniors, Mandy Alonzo, defensive lineman, Charles Snowden, star outside linebacker, and then Terrell Janna, the leading returning catch pass receiver, and all talking about in their own various ways that it's just great to be able to get back out there and play a game that means something. And all expressing disappointment that, you know, the Tech game didn't come off a schedule. That game's been rescheduled to the end of the season now, December 12th. Because when the Georgia game went away, that was going to be a huge game, obviously. The players have known about that game for years. As I mentioned, 2017 was on the schedule. And you're opening, at least in your mind, you're opening with an SEC team that's ranked in the top 10 in the country. That gets you up a little bit more. I've talked with coaches in years past. You know, a lot of schools will start with a sort of easy game, quote-unquote easy game. But those who schedule a tough game to start the season, that defines your whole offseason. And so then when that went away, but the ACC says, you know, a month and a half ago, hey, Virginia's going to play Virginia Tech in the opener. Okay, we don't get to play Georgia. We get to play our rival, Virginia Tech. This is awesome. We get a chance to, you know, go out there and hit those guys. And then that goes away. So, yeah, it was a disappointment. But then quickly the ACC gets Duke, and Duke agrees. And graciously Duke does so. The UVA Duke game had been scheduled for November 14th. And within a couple of hours on that Saturday morning, a couple of weeks ago, when UVA Tech got rescheduled, The Duke folks came in, ACC folks came in. They agreed to move that game up from November 14th to September 26th. And so now these guys have a chance to go out there and play football. And you can tell they're ready to play.
Yeah, thankfully, UVA didn't have to wait another week for their home opener. But Duke, on the other hand, this is the third week in a row that they faced a team that's basically playing their season opener. And in some ways, you might say, well, okay, Duke's played two games. Maybe they have an advantage over UVA, who's coming in, and this is their first game outside of scrimmages among, you know, their own team. But you could also say perhaps that there's a disadvantage to that too. UVA, of course, has a new starting quarterback this year. And the Duke team, unfortunately, hasn't been able to see any film of what the offense might look like under that new quarterback. Chris, you wrote a column this week, an article this week, detailing the advantages and disadvantages of both teams. How does it break down?
Yeah, you know, in the end, I'll skip to the end, then I'll go back to the beginning and take us through. But in the end, I think that Bronco Mendenhall and David Cutcliffe, the Duke coach, both agreed that it can be a wash. It really depends on which way you look at it as to who has an advantage and disadvantage in this scenario. But Duke it is an advantage in one respect for Duke. They've played twice now. They lost both games, so that's a disadvantage. They played, and they went from week one to week two. They actually played much – they didn't play better in week two. Normally, teams make a great game between week one and week two. Duke looked good in their loss at Notre Dame. The final score was 27-13, but that game was a 17-13 game going into the fourth quarter. And I thought Duke played well in that game against a top 10 team in Notre Dame. Last week, they lose 26-6 at home to Boston College, a team that we don't know a lot about. They only played the one game. Not a lot of expectations for this Boston College team coming into the season. So maybe we'll find out later we should have had expectations for Boston College, or maybe we'll find out that Duke really laid an egg last week. It was 7-6 at halftime, 5 turnovers for Duke, 2 interceptions thrown by Chase Bryce, the quarterback, 3 fumbles, and just never in that game in the second half. And so, they've played twice. So they know what they've got. They know what they need to work on. And that could be an advantage. Virginia, Bronco Mendenhall making the point, hey, we don't know what we have. I mean, we have, we know what we have from a scrimmage standpoint. We know what we have from a practice standpoint, but we've not seen it in game action. And game action is the ultimate test. And as much as an advantage it might be for Virginia not to have any film out there of what the offense is going to look like, and Duke, as a result, has no knowledge of what Virginia is going to look like offensively, Virginia also has the disadvantage in that respect. Brennan Armstrong, the new starting quarterback, he's not started a game in his career. He's a third-year player at UVA. He enrolled early. Interesting story about Brennan Armstrong. He's a sophomore in eligibility. He's played games in each of his first two seasons, but he didn't play enough that first season to have to burn his redshirt. So he's just a redshirt sophomore. He enrolled early at UVA. He actually graduated high school a semester early to enroll a semester early at UVA. So he went to spring practice that first year. So he had a couple of springs. And so he's got a lot of experience for a guy who's never started a game yet at quarterback.
Well, yeah, let's talk about Brennan Armstrong just a bit. He obviously has big shoes to fill, right? Because he's replacing Bryce Perkins, who set so many records for UVA, now playing on the practice squad for the Los Angeles Rams. What are the expectations for Brennan Armstrong? What are you hearing out of UVA as far as what they expect out of him this season?
I actually wrote a column a couple weeks ago. I called it addition by addition because, Bryce Perkins, you're not just going to replace Bryce Perkins. He was everything to this offense for 2 years. He was the cumulative leading rusher the last 2 years. He actually led the team in rushing last year. The year before, he ran for over 900 yards, and Jordan Ellis just barely beat him, got over 1,000 that season. And of course, in throwing for all the yards, 3,000-plus yards each season. Perkins was the offense. You know, I used to say this about Virginia Tech's offense when Michael Vick was the quarterback there. The play call, the offense was, hey, Michael, do something. The last 2 years, the offense at UVA was, hey, Bryce, do something. Either move the chains with your feet, throw a pass, do some combination of both. And they relied so much on Perkins that, you know, fortunately, you know, you didn't lose him. But if you'd have lost him, he'd have lost everything. In part, that was because the running game wasn't that good. The offensive line was in tatters a bit, you know, young and getting better, but with injuries here and there. Well, now I'm answering the question by talking about this. Brennan Armstrong does not have to be Bryce Perkins, thankfully, because he can't be, because Bryce Perkins is probably a once-in-a-generation quarterback for a program like UVA. They're not going to find a lot of guys with his skill set to just walk in and play to UVA. Guys like that normally go to much bigger schools. But Brent Armstrong, he doesn't need to be, because the offensive line, the UVA offensive line, actually they return all five starters. Now, Bobby Haskins won't play this week because he's out with injury. He's expected back for the game next week with Clemson. But all five returning starters are back, and they had the most cumulative starts in the ACC. So what has been a weakness the past few years is a strength. The offensive line will make the ground game better. It'll make it so that Armstrong doesn't have to quite worry about the pass rush quite as much. He does have some good returning guys. I mentioned Terrell Janna, the leading receiver back, had 70-plus catches last year. He's got some more weapons at tight end. He's got Tony Poljan, the transfer from Central Michigan. So he's got more weapons maybe than Perkins had, a running game and a tight end. That's a great pass-catching tight end. He's got some good receivers. So Brennan Armstrong doesn't need to be Bryce Perkins. He can be Brennan Armstrong. And, one thing you know about Brennan Armstrong is he's a battler. He's a competitive guy. He's played in some meaningful action. He took some snaps when Bryce Perkins got injured in a couple of games. He led a couple scoring drives when it mattered against Georgia Tech, against Louisville. And so he's tested, not quite, full game tested, but I think there's some confidence in what Brennan Armstrong will be able to do for this team.
So we talked a little bit about UVA and the O-line. Of course, there's high expectations for that O-line, especially with returners. We talked a little bit also about Duke and about their quarterback, Chase Bryce. But, of course, there were high expectations for him as well. He was a former four-star prep recruit. But so far, his play has been minimal. I mean, in the fact that he has only completed a little over 54% of his passes over the first two games. So a lot of people are thinking that maybe going into this game, Virginia is right now a 6-point favorite, according to Vegas odds, if you believe in those kinds of things. But a lot of people are saying this might be a must-win game for Duke and for their quarterback. What are your thoughts on that?
It could be. Must-win games this early in the season. But, Duke, under David Cutcliffe, has last year they fell off a bit. They were 5-7, but for years they were a consistent winner, and so you don't want to start 0-3. It's a team with a new quarterback, but Bryce is one of the more talented quarterbacks that Cutcliffe has been given. He obviously had Daniel Jones eventually be drafted in the first round by the Giants a couple of years ago, but when Daniel Jones got there, he was a no-star recruit. He was a walk-on, and so Chase Bryce as a recruit, you mentioned the four-star prep recruit rating. He's a guy that comes in with as much in terms of wherewithal as a quarterback as Cutcliffe's ever had at Duke. Of course, he coached the Mannings, both at Tennessee and then at Mississippi. Peyton at Tennessee as a quarterbacks coach, and then he was the head coach in Mississippi when Eli was the quarterback. But at Duke, he's not had access to this level of talent. So it's been a little surprising to see Bryce struggle. I mean, 54%, that offense, though, is designed for a quarterback to complete 60 to 65%, at least low 60s. He's only led four scoring drives. The turnovers have been an issue. And then defensively also, not only do they have the issue that they've not played good defense the first 2 weeks, but then they lose both their starting quarterbacks. Veteran guys, too, a redshirt junior and then a senior, to surgery this week. So, they're behind the eight ball, definitely going into this one. And from the perspective of Duke, they just want to play good football. Win or lose, obviously you want to win if you're Duke, but win or lose, they just want to play better football than they played certainly last week. They really laid an egg last week in that loss to Boston College.
So what about UVA? Do you feel like they're going to have some first game jitters kind of going into this game? I mean, obviously, normally during a football season, that first game is kind of one to work out the kinks. There's usually a lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers, a lot of penalties. What are the expectations for UVA in this game one? And also, how do the players feel about everything? I know that you've been transcribing interviews with players throughout the week and done a couple of stories, but, they went from no spring practice to summer training camp. This has gone on, like you said, for 12 weeks now before they're now coming here into game one for them. How's everybody feeling about this first game?
Well, first, for the expectations, it's interesting. I think this team is going to be better than the consensus of media thinks about this team. The ACC media voted Virginia ninth in the ACC this year. This year there's no divisions. Everybody's 1 through 15. And so Virginia was picked ninth. I think they're going to be better than that. I like the offense. I like the line being the most experienced in the ACC. I know that you lose Bryce Perkins, and maybe that's what people who don't cover UVA day to day, they miss. They say, oh, well, they don't have Bryce Perkins. He did everything for 2 years for them. That's going to be hard to replace. And again, I mentioned they don't need to have that. I like the running game. I like the receiver core. I like the tight end core. The defense is going to be the bulk of this, the backbone of this team, though. You return 9 of your 11 starters from the last 3 games of the season last year. You buttress that with some talent injected, a couple of JMU transfers that are on the 2 deep for this team this year that were great guys at that level, NFL prospects. And so you throw all that together, the defense is going to be strong. The offense, I think, is going to be good enough and doesn't need to rely just on one guy to do everything. I think this team has some internally, they have expectations. I think they want to prove everybody wrong. They want to prove that, hey, that ninth place prediction you gave us is an insult to us. We played in the Orange Bowl last year. That said, yes, first game. And first game coming September 26th. This is obviously very late for a team that's been on ground since July 5th. Training and everything else. And so, yeah, they have the first game jitters. You have if you had a veteran quarterback back, it would be one thing. Then you could say, okay, we know what we've got, but you have all that uncertainty. What's the play calling going to be like? How do we, meld that around? Whereas Duke's already played 2 games, even though they have injuries, even though they haven't played great, they know what they got. Virginia still doesn't know what they have. So yeah, I think that there could be. And plus, then it's their first game. See, Duke's already played twice, at least once with no fans or very limited fans. The home game with Boston College was in North Carolina, where there's very limited opportunity for fans. They played a game up in Notre Dame, roughly 20,000 fans, but this will be less than 1,000 fans.
Right, and so let's talk about that too, because one of the things that you wrote about this week on Augusta Free Press was about how typically, the team kind of feeds off of the fans. UVA is known for having, loud fans usually in the stands. And of course, with less than 1,000 people in attendance, all of a sudden you're kind of taking the competitive advantage of the home team away. I know that UVA coach Bronco Mendenhall and some of the players talked with you a little bit about what that might look like without the fans there.
I was looking around. I've got these towels that we got at games last year that say the fourth side on them. And I don't have one in this room. I'll have to rectify that mistake before my next UVA sports podcast. But the fourth side is what's talked about here as being important this week. And what the fourth side is for fans who have seen the towels, have one at home themselves, and then wonder, okay, what is that? The way Bronco coaches, and he set this up with his program, the 2 sides are offense, defense, third side, special teams. The fourth side is how players interact with each other and with the players on the field when they're on the sidelines. And so they actually coach the players to be very active, vocal on the sidelines. And for UVA fans, now that I explained that to you, those who didn't understand why that's what the fourth side is talking about, you now know intuitively what I'm talking about there. The first time I really saw it was that game back in, I think, 2017 when UVA won early, or maybe it was 2018. I think it was 2017. Early that season, they won the road at Boise State, a game that Virginia was predicted to lose by a couple touchdowns, obviously, for lots of reasons. Boise State is Boise State, and that Virginia team was coming off a terrible season. And, remember the emotion that you saw that night. That was a Thursday or Friday night game on ESPN. And you saw the players jumping up and down, hooping and hollering and doing that for the whole game. And I know I myself, because I'd covered the team the year before and didn't really notice all that going on the year before. It was new and maybe they hadn't gotten into it as much. I thought it was a natural reaction to, oh, my God, we beat Boise State 42-23. And that was just a natural outpouring. As it turns out, that's the way it's coached. They want their players to be that loud, that vocal, jumping up and down and going crazy the entire game, because the attitude is from, and Bronco Mendenhall explained that this week, the attitude is, if you're on the sidelines and you're not in the game, if you're a guy, maybe he's not even on the 2 deep, you can still participate. And if you're loud, if you're jumping up and down, if you're cheering your teammates on, then that helps get them energized and then maybe, helps the team out in a great way. So now that's with 60, 80, 100,000 fans in the stands, right? There's going to be 1,000 fans in the stands. This could be very important for Virginia. And Bronco talked about, wouldn't it be interesting if us coaching the fourth side could be pivotal this season and games in environments where there's a limited number of fans, because, you know, there's not going to be noise. You know, that's, we know that there might be some piped in stadium noise, but it's not going to be the energy from the crowd. You can't get energy from the crowd, at least early this season. We'll have to see how the season plays out. At least early this season, we know there's not going to be that energy coming from down from the stands. So, but if it can emanate from the sidelines, that could be an advantage for UVA.
It definitely reminds me of like AEW wrestling, how in the beginning when they first came back, you know, they were doing their, you know, their matches and that kind of thing with really no one there. And then all of a sudden you started seeing them add, you know, like the talent maybe that wasn't on the main roster, you know, kind of like on the perimeter, and they were cheering the people on. And it definitely does create a different effect when you're watching on television. And I imagine that will be the same thing that will be happening, you know, with UVA, you know, as long as there are players. And again, it gives a great opportunity for players who normally sit the bench, you know, to be a little bit more involved in game day. So it will be interesting to see the fourth side in action this Saturday.
I want to add in that Bronco did say one thing that they have to coach a little bit is that they want to make sure it's going to be a quiet environment. I mean, the TV cameras and the microphones everywhere, there'll be as many microphones and everything else as there normally are in the stadium, but there's usually 60,000 people, so the sound coming down can kind of, you know, edit some of that stuff out. He said, we're going to have to make sure, since there's not going to be many people in the crowd, that our cheers and exhortations are appropriate. So we'll be listening for that. Hopefully no 7-second delays from the broadcast folks on Saturday.
Yeah, no question. Well, obviously COVID-19 changed everything about how teams are getting ready for game day. We've talked a little bit about that, but you did write an article very specific to that about how, you know, tackling, huddling, things like that really didn't happen until much later in the practice season than would normally happen. There was a lot more focus on technique and that kind of thing. You know, Bronco Mendenhall said actually that things really started to shift focus maybe mid last week, where more emphasis was on the finishing blocks, again, things like that. You also had some quotes from David Cutcliffe about the very same thing, about how this is really about kind of reinventing the wheel this season when he's used to using the same techniques in practice, you know, over 20, 25 years in his career. So definitely COVID-19 has changed things, don't you think, Chris?
Well, the government response has certainly changed things. Yeah, and we've written stories about the UVA side of this for months. I mean, dating back to probably early April, the media folks at UVA have done a great job keeping us in touch with the men's basketball and the football programs. And so it goes all the way back to, you know, when those players were dispersed across the country because schools let players and student athletes encouraged them to go back home, which was probably not smart. Send them back home to parents and maybe grandparents that if you had COVID, which they didn't, but if you did, you could expose them. That was a pretty dumb decision on the part of those, but they did it. All of a sudden, those athletes lost access to the great training facilities that all these schools have spent millions of dollars building up. So they had to devise individualized training schedules for them. Of course, they lost, again, UVA and Tech and Carolina lost the entirety of their spring practice. So spring practice was done via Zoom, just like we're talking right now, via Zoom. And so all the way from that to then, yeah, now they're actually on, in UVA's case, their own grounds. What do we do with them? Now, Bronco said that his decision to limit the tackling until the last week and a half or so wasn't so much COVID related, because they've done studies and other schools have done studies too. I know Tech has done their own studies, and I think maybe he referenced North Carolina studies too, Miami is what he referenced. But various schools have done studies. They show their schools are academic institutions to get a feeling for just how, you know, the assumption is when you're on the football field, you know, you're in close contact with people. How long are you in close contact? You know, the CDC guidelines say 15 minutes of consistent contact is what's sort of needed as a baseline for this potential spread of a virus, including COVID. And what was found is actually that the linemen have more contact with each other, both internally, the offensive group with the other offensive players, defensive group with them, and then across the line with each other. But even that they don't come close to 15 minutes of exposure during a practice or during a game. So that's one interesting thing that, you know, with all these leagues shutting down this year, if they had just done those studies and just followed the science, as we like to talk about, they would have actually made the decisions maybe that they made. That said, As he had access to this information, Bronco said that, you know, what they decided to do was not limit the tackling, et cetera, for COVID reasons. It was mainly just to keep the guys fresh because they didn't know their schedule. They didn't know when they were going to play. Let's not start too soon. And maybe, I mean, tackling and blocking are the most important parts of the game. They also are the parts of the game that lead you to potential injury. So the more we can do to limit our exposure to injury was more the issue than it was about COVID. Now, what Cutcliffe had to say, he offered a different perspective. You mentioned the 20 to 25 years of practice scripts and everything else. He said a big issue with that was just the limited availability of players. Because they don't have as many guys on the roster this year, he said, you know, less walk-ons, et cetera. The walk-ons and the scout team guys are important because you can work your first team offense against the scout team defense, your scout team offense against your first team defense, and you can be a little more aggressive. You can block harder. You can tackle more with those young guys that you're not relying maybe to be in your two deep this year. With less of those guys, then you have to rejigger things. I did think it was interesting that Bronco talked about how they've changed their huddling up a little bit. You know, defensive teams don't huddle that much. Defensive teams tend to, you know, all the guys look to the sidelines, the coordinator or whoever the design assistant coach gives the signals. The middle linebacker will tend to be the guy who kind of sets the defense, but they're already sort of in place. Offensively, you often see, and I mean, there are teams who run the tempo offenses. UVA does some tempo, but largely huddles. So what they did was they talked about they changed the guys who stand between the different linemen because sort of the one you huddle. Again, I didn't ever pay attention to any of this stuff, Chris. I've been covering college sports 25 years, and now I'm going to be paying attention on Saturday to how they huddle. But at least the UVA side, the linemen, I guess, sort of form the wall, and then everybody kind of gathers around on the other side. Now they're to limit the number of minutes that these guys are within each other's presence. They're going to put different skill guys in between them so that it cuts down that clock. So, I mean, little things like that. That shows you the level of detail that it's taken for these coaches to kind of figure these things out. It's a lot different than anything they've ever experienced before.
All right, so UVA is going into the season opener versus Duke, healthy, we presume. 4 p.m. start time on the ACC Network. Chris, you've written a ton of stories. I included links to those for anyone who's following us on the Facebook Live. If you're not, you can still click over to Facebook and you can see those links to those stories. Most of what we were discussing was in one of the stories that we ran on Augusta Free Press in the last week or so. I know you've got some additional coverage coming up as well, Chris. Could you let people know kind of what you still have planned leading up to game time on Saturday?
Yeah, I hope I'll get these done today. If not, it'll be early tomorrow. But the last two pieces we have will be sort of regular features we'll have this season leading up to game day. We'll have a five things to watch for story column coming out. I'll pick five different things that I think are the most important things to look for in this particular matchup. And then we'll do our traditional breakdown of, you know, where we kind of match up Duke's offense against Virginia's defense, Virginia's offense against Duke's defense, look in depth at their special teams and kind of give you the skinny, as I guess you could say, kind of highlight the key players on both sides of the ball and then try to give you the best sense you can possibly have how things might go on Saturday.
Well, I am looking forward to the continued analysis and breakdowns, and I am interested to see how UVA quarterback Brennan Armstrong is going to be doing in his season starter as well for UVA. I am sure that you will have all the coverage throughout the game and after the game as well for those of you who are interested. Chris, I'm going to let you wrap us up today, but I appreciate all your insight throughout our podcast.
Well, thank you, Crystal. Great questions. Good research on your part. Yeah, so Saturday, the game's at 4, still toying around with what we're going to do, either a pregame show of some sort. I won't be in the stadium, so we can do something from the home office here, perhaps a postgame wrap, and then after the game, we'll have access. One thing, even though we won't be at the stadium, we'll still have access to all those interviews via Zoom with Coach Mendenhall and players. I'll probably be working into the wee hours of Saturday, of Sunday morning, I should say, and to kind of break down this game. So a couple more stories coming up today, maybe early tomorrow, and then a lot this weekend as we try to make sense of UVA season opener with Duke. And so thank you for joining us here live, also on the archive, on Facebook, or on Podbean. been great talking with you, and everyone have a great week.